Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Today, I'm really happy to have John Sonmez. He's an old buddy, and he's passionate about helping software developers learn how to not just improve their careers and technical ability, but to improve all areas in their lives. He's the author of the best-selling Soft Skills, Their Software Developer's Life Manual, and the founder of Simple Programmer. John, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Jesse?
I am doing really well. And one thing that was not in your bio is that I believe you have written more Pluralsight courses than anyone on earth.
Yeah, I believe that's still true. I've got about 55 of them. So yeah.
You are a machine.
It was certainly an adventure. I'm just blessed to have the opportunity to do that. I mean, it's a life-changing thing for me, just really changed the direction of my life. And, when I set out to do it, I wanted to give it my all. You know, I wanted to play all in. And so that's what I did.
Well, it's inspiring. I am attempting to spend nearly all my time building Pluralsight courses for the past 6 months. And I think one difference is that their library has grown so much that finding courses in the interstices of what's already there has become quite a challenge.
Oh, yeah, I definitely agree with you. Yeah, the times have definitely changed. You know, I was pretty fortunate when I first started that there was nothing but .NET topics, and so there wasn't anything, you know, I could come up with a lot of topics. Towards the end of the, you know, when I was really doing the courses, I started to feel that same struggle. I can't even imagine how difficult it is now to come up with a unique topic. You know, one of the things that I found was to take unique perspectives on different topics, and I think we're seeing a lot of that where you're taking multiple things and combining them together and showing how to implement something through the whole process, through the back end to the front end and stuff like that. Different approaches seems to be the way that, you know, to get new content now.
Absolutely. But you have changed directions in your career.
Yes. So a lot of people are probably wondering, I think I was known for doing so many Pluralsight courses and they're probably wondering, why, John, are you not doing any more Pluralsight courses? What has happened to you? Because, you know, it's probably been 2 years, maybe over 2 years since I've done a Pluralsight course. And, you know, I appreciate the opportunity and I loved helping people technically, you know, that I feel like, you know, just my whole life has been about teaching, about sharing what I learned. You know, just because I get so excited about it, and I want to share it with people, and I want to make things simple. I want to take it and make it so anyone can digest it. But as I was helping a lot of developers and doing some coaching and helping them with their technical ability, I realized that the technical ability was not the most important thing to not only becoming successful in your career, but to having a good life as a software developer. And I realized that there was a lot of software developers.
I got to tell you, thank goodness, those of us who are mediocre at technical ability appreciate that very much.
Well, I'm glad to say, because I think there's a lot of people that are just, you know, just really frustrated because they don't know everything in the world. Can you imagine that? Right. You know, I know my own fantasy used to be, I wish I could be a programmer in the 80s because then I could know it all. But I know you probably couldn't even know it all then. But anyway, you know, I got to this point where I realized that I kind of said to myself, I said, what is the most important thing? Like, how could I impact lives of software developers better than just creating another course? Like, what could I do? And I realized that, you know, I had been getting all these opportunities since doing Pluralsight and doing my blog to reach out to people, to develop my kind of social skills and what I call soft skills and to do personal development in lots of areas of my life. And I realized that there was no one really out there that was helping software developers to do this. To do the things like proactively managing their career, to getting in shape, you know, from the fitness side, to managing their finances, to learning productivity techniques, to, you know, just being, you know, okay with themselves and learning, getting on the path of loving life and improving. And so that's, you know, it became clear to me that that's what I needed to do. And so that's what I've sort of dedicated my life to at this point.
That is very exciting. I want to dive into some of the details, but do you do that independently? Do you do that from home, or have you set up a place to do this? How does this work?
So mostly, you know, I've been figuring this out as I go because there's really no blueprint for this for this job. I still don't know. You know, when someone says, "What do you do?" I have like 1,000 different answers, so I probably have to figure that out. But what I do now is I have a site. My blog, it all kind of came from my blog, which is Simple Programmer. It's at simpleprogrammer.com, and from there, you know, I kind of started out just writing blog articles, just aspect the human aspect of software development, talking about, you know, things like how to just how to deal with your coworkers, how to be better at what you're doing, productivity, all those kind of topics. And from there, I sort of expanded out and I've built a few podcasts. I have a Get Up and Code podcast about fitness. I've sort of stopped doing that now. And someone else was taking over because I've been shifting my focus, trying to find the most area of impact. And then I have a podcast that's weekly that I'm actually going to be recording in a couple hours called Entreprogrammers. And it's like a mastermind group. It's sort of for the developer entrepreneur, just real honest talk about what we're doing and how we're building our businesses. And then, you know, and I've built some training materials. I built a course on how to market yourself as a software developer, because I thought that was something that really was necessary. That's how my career ended up, you know, exploding, was once I learned those skills. I built a 10 steps to learn anything quickly course, because again, I think that, you know, learning things, being able to teach yourself is important. And then I've published recently, I guess it's been a year now, it's been published, Soft Skills, the Software Developer's Life Manual, which is sort of just the culmination of all the stuff that I've learned in personal development and life and software development and career, and put that all together. And now really one of the big areas that I'm trying to impact now is I'm releasing about 15 YouTube videos a week on just all kinds of topics. I'm having people write in and ask me questions, and then I'm recording the videos and just trying to reach as many people there. I feel like I feel like the video medium is the medium that I love the most, because I feel like it's a very personal medium, unlike other mediums where I can just, you know, reach people and see them. And well, I mean, I guess I can't see them, but they can see me at least. So that's what I'm doing. I'm just kind of reaching out in all those areas and speaking at some events when I get the opportunity, when it's the right event, and just trying to, you know, encourage software developers to think about more than just the technical stuff and to really, you know, focus on what's important in their lives and how to improve their lives in ways that doesn't require you to learn every single technical framework and programming language there is.
Really, there's a need for more balance in the industry in terms of taking care of ourselves and looking beyond just the programming.
Yeah, definitely. I, you know, and that's something that I hope can change, you know, in the future. So, and I've seen, you know, great. I mean, it's an amazing thing to see stories. You know, I'm in the position now, having been doing this for the last few years, that now the success stories are coming in, and there's nothing better than getting that email or that message from someone that's like, wow, you know, you changed my life around. I lost, you know, 50 pounds, 100 pounds. I got doubled my salary. But more important, I'm happy with where I'm at now. Whereas I always felt like a failure before, and now I feel like I have the power to change my life and to succeed. So that's amazing, and that's the experience. You know, I want to bring that to as many people as possible.
And what would be a good starting point if someone were interested in what you have to say?
I would say the best starting point is to go to get my book, the Soft Skills, the Software Developer's Life Manual. That's where, when I do coaching, I don't do a lot of one-on-one coaching anymore, because I want to, you know, leverage and reach more people. But one of the prerequisites, if someone wanted to sign up with personal coaching with me, is that they have to read the book, because that's what, I mean, I put everything that I know, at least at that point, into that book. And so I think that's really a good starting point.
So where does someone get that book?
Pretty much all the booksellers. Amazon is probably the best place that I recommend, but Manning sells it directly, who's my publisher for that. I also, you know, one thing that I have always found beneficial is listening to audiobooks, because I'm busy, right? I'm running around, I'm working out, I'm driving places, you know, traveling, and sometimes it's difficult to pick up a book. So one thing that was really important to me was to create an audio version of the book. So that's one thing I did also, and I felt like it was really important that it was recorded in my voice, because it's a personal book. And so I recorded an audio version that you can find on Audible, and I added some personal injections there that aren't in the print copy of the book. So that's actually a good option as well. It's about 13 hours of audio.
I got to teach you how to plug your book and say the name every other sentence.
Okay, yes.
So I could use. What's the full name?
Soft Skills, the Software Developer's Life Manual.
Okay, great. So how does this work? People read the book, and then do they contact you? Do they get ongoing support on your blog?
Yeah, so there's a few different things. You know, there's a lot of places you can go from there, depending on what you want more of. And I'm expanding it out more. But basically, like, if you click any link in the book or go to any link, there will be an option to sign up to get a bonus chapter of the book about dealing with criticism, actually. Because if you're going to do any of these things, and I'm sure you know, right? if you build any kind of success or name for yourself, you're going to deal with criticism. criticism, right?
Oh, I've had my share of criticism.
Yeah, yeah. So so I created a bonus chapter on that. But when you sign up for the bonus chapter for soft skills, the Software Developer's Life Manual, you'll also get on an email. Like I created this email sequence that has, I think, about 50 emails in there just to help you and encourage you on the way. Because I know, like, I read a book, right? And the thing is, like, I'm like, oh, this is good. This is good. I got to do this. I got to apply this. And, you know, like, months go by and I'm like, oh, shoot, I forgot to do this stuff in the book. And I forgot about it. And so I didn't want people that read my book to have that experience. So, you know, it's follow-ups. It's me helping you, you know, coming by your side and saying, hey, how's it going? Remember that what we talked about, you know, setting a goal for your life? Like, did you do that? Like, tell me what your goal was. And I respond back to the emails. So it's kind of a pathway. And then it leads into some of my other content. You know, there's YouTube videos on there and my various courses. If someone wants to learn more about improving their career and how to market themselves, or they want to learn how to learn things quickly, and or if they just want to get plugged into my YouTube channel and just get, you know, videos from me that are encouraging you to keep on the path that you maybe set out when you started reading the book. So it's what's that quote? Oh, gosh, I always forget it, but it's if the only way to avoid criticism is to do nothing, say nothing, be nothing.
And
it's sad. I mean, you know, the thing though that I've discovered with the criticism is that now when someone, you know, when someone comes from that place of writing that, like, if in order for you as a human being to tear down another human being, you've got to be in a place where you're hurting a lot.
Yep.
And so I, you know, instead of getting mad now, I feel, you know, we can interpret events in our lives however we want. And I choose to interpret criticism now in a way that I feel sorry for that person. Like, honestly, that I feel like I can I help out? Can I reach out to that person and help them? Because they're I guarantee you, if they're giving you criticism, they're in a worse place than you are, and you could help them. So I don't know. That's my view now. And it's helped me not just, I mean, then it doesn't hurt as much. I'll tell you, it still hurts, but it doesn't hurt as much. And at least maybe something good. And sometimes good comes from it. I mean, some of my worst critics have become my biggest fans because no one else in their life was cared. And I said, hey, is there something I could help you with, man? Like, is there something? Some way I can, you know, you got some points with what you said, but so I don't know. I mean, I would just encourage people. I think if we all respond to criticism that way, we'd have a nice, a really strong community of support.
I totally agree. When I first got getting criticism, I would lash right back or answer defensively. And when I switched over to, I'm really sorry you were disappointed in the book, and we can certainly arrange a refund, but if you could tell me a little more about what you were disappointed in, I bet we'd straighten it out. And the next email would be, you know, so sorry that I sounded so harsh, but here's where I'm stuck and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, there really is a difference in how you respond to things, and it makes a difference in other people's lives as well. I totally agree with you on that. You have not said through this whole conversation the word mindfulness. Is that part of what you do?
Yeah, I would say so. I try to avoid some of the term. Sometimes the words, like, there's a lot of, you know, being present, being in the moment, and mindfulness, you know, comes to mind as well. And sometimes it seems to me like a lot of people don't really understand what that is, and so there's this kind of remember to be in the moment, and it then becomes stressful. It's like, oh, I got to be mindful, I got to be in the moment. And yeah, I like to think of it as being conscious versus being unconscious. And when we're conscious, we're focused on what's going on with the people around us and the events. We're not thinking in our head, and it's really hard to not think in your head, to be present, but it's really easy to just, you know, the way I remember it, it's just like when someone's talking to me, I want to hear what they're saying. I want to connect with what they're saying, and I want to focus on that. And that brings you present. Also, slapping yourself in the face brings you present. You know, but yeah, so I think that is a big part. And that's something that I struggle with. I'll be honest. It's a huge struggle for me, is, you know, it's so tempting to whip out that phone and just you know, to check my email and check YouTube stats or whatever it is, and not be there. So I struggle with it. You know, I think it's a challenge today. It's more of a challenge than ever, but it makes a big impact. You know, I don't know if I've had the experience of someone really listening to me before when I've needed to, and it's impacted me. And so we all know when the other person isn't really listening. So
absolutely. I'm sorry, I got distracted. What were you saying? One of the things that you mentioned was how to learn anything was one of your courses.
Yeah.
And can you boil that down a little bit for me and tell me what that's about?
Sure. So, you know, I mean, one of the things that with creating 55 Pluralsight courses is everyone says, John, well, how did you couldn't have possibly known all those topics. And it's right. You know, when I first started out, I did what I knew. I was like, okay, what kind of things do I know? And so I started doing courses on that, but I quickly ran out of stuff that I know. and I still wanted to make courses and I still wanted to learn things and share. And here was my opportunity. So how was I going to do this? And so I, out of necessity, you know, I think one of the best ways to grow in life is to just dive right in, to you know, it's a sink, to put yourself in sink or swim situations. So I'm always trying to put myself in those sink or swim. So I commit to things and then I figure out ways to do them. It's burning the boats, right? I like to burn the boats behind me. And that's what I did with a lot of Pluralsight courses. It's like, I don't even know this thing, but I'm writing a course on this. So I after doing that a lot of times, right, you can imagine, I didn't have a system. But at the end of it, you know, by the time I was done with like 30 or 40 courses, I sort of developed a technique for doing this. I got to this point where honestly, I can say that I could learn a technology or programming language in a week, and then I could teach it in the next week. And I know that sounds like, well, you couldn't really learn it. But, you know, the thing is, like, if you do it so much, you do, you can. And it's not me. I'm not a genius, you know, but anyone can do it if they do it right. And so I kind of developed this technique after that. I kind of said, okay, well, how can I help people again and condense this down to a set of steps that anyone can follow? And the steps themselves aren't important, but I just made it 10 steps in order to give you something to think about. But here's the overall concept of it, is essentially this. What you need to do if you want to learn something is first you have to understand kind of the big picture of what it is you're going to learn. Because a lot of people jump into things and they don't even know anything about it. And so they don't know what they don't know. And that becomes a problem because the problem space becomes huge, right? I mean, if you want to learn physics, what does that mean? that's huge. So the first thing I do is I get a little bit of background information and then I narrow the scope, right? You want to learn something very specific that's actionable that allows you to do something. A lot of people learn. And I say, well, why are you learning? And they don't have an answer. And my answer is always, you learn things in order to be able to do something. So you want to be able to do something. And then you learn the thing that lets you do the thing you want to do. And guess what happens when you learn that way? It becomes more than learning. It becomes understanding. And that was something that a critical, you know, insight in my life is I realized that I cannot absorb information. But if I'm trying to do something and I don't know how to do it, and I learn how to do it, then I get it. And I feel like most people operate in that way. So getting that scope to something that is based on a goal. I'm trying to do this, so I need to learn this specific thing. I don't need to learn all of digital photography. I want to be able to create a great portrait photo for my family, so I need to learn how to take portrait photography with this brand of camera. Okay, now we've got something we can learn, and the scope is small, right? We can do that, and maybe we can narrow the scope even further if we want to. So that's kind of the first thing is. And then the second thing is to get good resources to be able to learn, right? A lot of people, they think they pick up a book, and this used to be me, as I'd pick up a book and I would read the book cover to cover and it would just be one book and I wouldn't retain anything from that. And then I would, you know, and then I'd go on to the next book. And that's not really a very efficient learning process. So in order to, if you can imagine, if you're going to teach a Pluralsight course and you're going to learn it in a week, you got to get a lot of resources and you got to be kind of picky. You can't read books cover to cover. You got to pick out what you need. So So my next kind of step, and I'm kind of combining some of these things, but is to pick out quality resources, multiple ones. It could be books. It could be experts that you could connect with. It could be audio tapes. It could be blogs, websites, any of those things, and get a good list of resources. Then you're going to narrow those resources down to the best ones, right? You're going to filter that out. And then finally, the big part of this, and this goes right into course creation, is you're going to create a course for yourself. You're going to go through and you're going to say, okay, now, based on what I want to learn and the scope that I have and these resources that I have, what's my learning plan? What's my learning path? You know, what steps do I need? First, I need to learn this. First, I need to learn about light, because if you're going to learn photography, right, let's learn about light. Then I need to learn about whatever the next thing is and the step that step on each other. And the way that you figure this out, one of my shortcuts is to go to the table of contents of books, you know, from your resources and see what's in common. What are they teaching? Now, you don't need to know everything in every book, but if you see a lot of common patterns of steps of chapters, that's a good way to create a learning plan. And for me, that ends up becoming the modules in the Pluralsight courses that I create, because as I'm learning, I'm teaching, right? So you create your own personalized learning plan, and then you go through. And then this is where the critical step is with learning. We learn when we play, right? When we're having fun and when we experiment. So the way that you learn each piece of this is that you go through and you say, hey, look, okay, I'm just going to skim it. I'm just going to learn enough to get started. I want to learn how to fire up Visual Studio and write Hello World. And then after that, you don't dive into the books. You just get enough to get started. Then you play for a little bit. You experiment. You test this thing out. And the whole point of this is to develop questions, right? Because if you get questions, if you get curious, then when you go back and read the book, you answer those questions and you remember the stuff and you feel good about it and you know what's important. So you get enough to get started, you play around, you know, feel uncomfortable, get a bunch of questions, and then you go back and you use the resources that you've filtered to answer those questions for you. And when you've answered the questions yourself, because they were questions that came up from you playing around and experimenting with the technology or whatever it was, they stick with you. Then it goes into understanding. And then there's one final step to this, which is critically important, and everyone ignores this, which is to teach. You gotta teach. If you you teach to someone else, it reorganizes the information in your head in a way that's orderly, and that's the first time that you truly understand it, right? If you can't teach something, you don't truly understand it. But once you teach, and I don't care if you teach it to your dog, right? You can make some PowerPoint slides and teach it to your dog, or, you know, my favorite is just to bore the hell out of my wife when I'm learning something and but it doesn't matter, right? However you teach it, create a YouTube video, share it with a friend, whatever you do, that teaching process, it's not just, it's so great because it benefits someone else, hopefully, as well, but it makes you understand. That's where you reach understanding. And I'm sure as a great teacher that you are, you know, someone who I admire and respect, who's really someone I've looked up to in the industry, because I mean, you all the books you've written, all the teaching and impact that you've had, I'm sure that you've experienced this of really getting it and understanding it once you've taught it, or, you know, taught it to someone else.
Well, I totally agree. Setting aside your kind words, there's no question in my mind that teaching is the best way to solidify your understanding of virtually any topic. And there's a thing called duck programming, which I think is closely related, where you run into a problem and you tell it to your rubber ducky. And in telling it the problem, you often find the solution. And I think that when you're teaching, you often find the structure that you're looking for.
Exactly. Yep, I totally agree.
All right, I'm going to change directions on you. Your best-selling book is called Soft Skills. And tell me what soft skills are and why, as a developer, I want to know about this.
Sure. Okay. So I define soft skills probably a little bit differently than most people do. The way I define soft skills is anything that's not a hard skill. That's my programmer mindset, right? So what that means is anything that's not a hard skill, anything that's not a technical skill, that includes everything, right? And so, I mean, obviously I can't cover everything in the book, but I did try. It is 504 pages. So I tried to cover as much as possible, just about the lessons that I learned in life. A lot of people define soft skills as people skills, and that's a really important aspect of it. It's one of the most important aspects of it. You know, most of us, our lives are not really writing code. It's dealing with people. All of our jobs involve dealing with people. You know, without people, we don't have jobs. We don't have a reason. So I think it's critical. But in the book, what I tried to do is break it down to all these different areas of your life. So it's broken down into different sections, and, you know, it's not complete. There's always more, but I try to get the best of the best. And so the first section that I felt was most relevant to developers is on your career, on managing your career. Then comes marketing yourself, like building a brand, because I feel like that's really, really important to understand. And then comes the productivity, how to become productive, right? Because this is, you could have all these great ideas and you could know what you want to do, but if you can't sit down and get to work, you're going to have problems. Then comes learning, and I cover actually my 10 steps program in there, kind of a briefer version of that. And then comes finance, and then fitness, and then spirit, or what I call spirit. This is maybe the self-help type of, you know, the deeper connection type of section in there, and it's even got a little relationships chapter in there. But yeah, so that's kind of the gambit of it. And you know, I think the thing is, like, a lot of developers might be, you know, listening to this and thinking, wow, I don't really need that stuff. You know, I just want to be the best, you know, JavaScript developer in the world. But the thing is, you know, that was my focus for a long time. I mean, for 15 years, right, I was just heads down, just learning as much stuff as possible, you know, mentoring, like having advancements in my career. But things didn't really start to take off, and I really didn't find my purpose until I found some of these other aspects aspects of life. You know, I think a lot of times we can be very sharp and very pointed in a single aspect or area of our lives, and the rest of our life suffers. And when the rest of your life suffers, eventually it destroys the thing that you were good at and focused at. And so that's what happens. A lot of people have their lives collapse because they don't look at a holistic approach of their life. They, you know, you can be, you see this all the time with rock stars and movie stars where they have it all. They have all their success, achievement in the world, and they have all this money, and then they go bankrupt or they're unhappy. Sometimes they kill themselves. So, you know, the thing is, like, it's important to, you know, even if your goal is just, John, hey, I just want to advance my career as much as possible. Well, Andrew Carnegie, one of the really most successful industrialists in the United States history, he always said that people skills were the most important thing in the world, and that technical skills were not nearly as important. And that's how he hired people. He found the value. You know, he was the first person to make $1 million a year salary, and it was because of his people skills, not because of his technical skills. And so I think, you know, it's really important to understand the other things, right? It's not just being really good, because you can sit at your desk and you could be the best programmer in the world, right? And no one knows it. What does it matter, right? And if you're not sharing it with anyone, what does it matter? People are not going to. They're, I used to have this really strong mindset of, you know, I'm not doing any of that other stuff. I am just going to just do my job, and people are going to recognize how good I am because I do such a good job. And that doesn't happen. What happens is if you don't take charge, if you don't have goals, if you don't actively manage your career, if you don't actively, you know, build a brand for yourself and market yourself and put yourself out there, people aren't going to take notice. You know, we're not just, you know, it's not just going to magically happen. You know, I did this video a little bit a while ago called, you know, everyone thinks they'll someday be a rock star. And sometimes we have this illusion in our head that, you know, someday I'm going to just make it. Someday everyone's going to appreciate how great I am. Someday I'm going to be a movie star or a rock star. And it doesn't happen unless you make it happen. I'm not saying that you can't make it happen, but you got to have goals. You got to have a path. You got to have a way to get there. And a part of that way also is going to involve a ton of people skills. You're going to have to learn how to manage your emotions, how to deal with people, how to understand people, how to interact with them. And if you don't do those things, you can still have a successful career as a software developer, but it's not going to be, I mean, if you want to take things to the next level, you've got to focus on these other areas of your life. And it's an impactful, I mean, countless times coaching developers now and having the book out and having reached a lot of developers, I've seen it countless times, so many success stories about, wow, you know, all of a sudden I started applying these things and my life exploded, my career exploded. And that was the thing that was missing. And I only say that because that was the thing that was missing for me. After struggling, banging my head for 15 years, wondering why other people got all these opportunities and why other people got to do these things and why I was making progress, but I wasn't getting to the level that I felt that I should be. I finally started to discover a lot of this stuff, and it changed my life. So I wanted to share it with everyone else.
So being a complete nerd, I listened to everything you said. And I'm not diminishing it. It was very cool and it makes sense to me. But of course, I zeroed in on the productivity part.
Sure.
Because I'm a geek. And so I feel like there should almost be a pause, because what you said was very powerful, and I'm going to, you know, go out and read your book. But you did say that part of what you bring to the table is helping people increase their productivity. And can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. So there's a few different techniques. You know, I've been searching high and low across the world for the best productivity techniques. I'm sort of a productivity junkie myself, so I can relate. You know, when people say that, my ears used to perk up. And so what I've done, you know, especially if you're the kind of person like me that like overcommits and dives in, you've got to figure out some way to be super productive. And especially during, I think, you know, there, I had the year, what I call the year, which was when I completed like 32 Pluralsight courses. I was running 3 times a week, lifting 3 times a week. I was writing a blog post once a week, creating 3 YouTube videos a week, producing 2 podcasts. I was doing all that. And that was the year I was the most productive.
I got to interrupt you for 1 second. I want to hear everything you're about to say. But did you just say 32 Pluralsight courses in a year?
Yes.
Okay. I'm fast. I've been told that I'm fast. and I can do a Pluralsight course in about a month, which 3 weeks to a month, which I'm told is really quick. That's 12 to 15 in a year. You just said 32. I mean, yeah. That's stunning.
Yeah, I was pumping them out about a week and a half to 2 weeks. In fact, I got the 32 done, and then I took November and December off because
of course
I needed
you did.
A break. I don't recommend it, you know, but this was, you know, it was a phase in my life. I wanted to really make the most of the opportunity that I could, and but anyway, in doing that, I definitely developed a technique. I mean, I had to have one. I had one a little bit before that. That's how I was able to do that. And what my technique was, you know, I looked at a lot of different productivity systems, so I combined a few different things. But it's actually a fairly simple technique. There's basically two parts of it, and I cover this in the soft skills book as well. But essentially, every week, at least when I'm implementing this, I'm actually not implementing this now because I started to realize I was becoming a little bit too machine-like, and I needed to find more of a place of passion than machine. And so I've reconnected with that. But anyway, so I would start out a week, and I would have this Kanban board, right? And I would basically I would come up with the tasks that need to be done that week. And every task that I would do, I would assign a Pomodoro count, a Pomodori count to it. So if you're not familiar with the Pomodoro technique, for anyone listening, it is basically, it's a real simple technique. All you do is you basically set a timer for 25 minutes. You focus on one task. Just that task, no interruptions, just focus on that task. And you do that, and then after 25 minutes, the thing dings, you take a 5-minute break, and then you move on to the next task. And after so many, you take a 15-minute break. So that's a basic, and I didn't understand how powerful this concept is. And maybe after I say this, then everyone else will understand how powerful this is as well. But that's a basic technique. And so I take this week, I have, you know, Monday through Sunday there on this board, I have all the tasks, every task I want to do, I assign it 1, 2, or 3 Pomodori. It can't be more than that, because if it's more than that, it needs to be broken down. Because when things, you know, as human beings, we're really good at estimating things that take, you know, like 5 minutes or 10 minutes or half an hour. The longer the time goes out, there's an exponential curve in the lack of accuracy of our measurements. And no one can estimate tasks that take more than 4 hours accurately. I'm sorry, but a lot of people think they can, but you just can't do it. So it's we have to come to terms with that, right? And so I can, the only way around that, and this is, I kind of are able to achieve that in this technique, is to break things into bricks that are estimatable and stack those bricks. If everything is a brick that's estimatable in time, then we've got a chance at becoming, you know, fairly accurate. There's still going to be some, you know, it's not going to be perfect, but it's going to give us the most accurate. That, I mean, that's why I could predict. I mean, okay, just to give you an example of how this works, my soft skills book, when I wrote that book, the publisher is like, oh, it probably would take you like a year and a half. Are you sure you want to do like 500 pages, 70 some chapters? And I said, well, yeah. It's like, okay, well, it might take you 2 years to write that. And I said, well, you know, I use a technique to measure, to plan. And I went back and I calculated the Pomodoro it would take me. And I said, it will take me exactly 3 months. And this is the date I'll finish. And that's exactly what happened. And, you know, because I knew it, because I had those bricks, but I don't want to sidetrack too much here. So basically, you know, the idea is that you've got this, I got this weekly plan, this weekly Kanban board with each column is a day of the week. I'm taking every task I do and I'm saying, is it 1, 2, or 3 Pomodori? If it's bigger than that, let's break it down into smaller tasks. And then I'm realizing my capacity as a human being to focus for an extended period of time is about 10 Pomodori, and that is it. That's about 5 hours of focus, and that's stretching it actually. And you know, and I discovered this myself through pain, but trying to do 14, 16 Pomodori, thinking I was a Superman. And then, you know, later I went and did some research and I was like, wow, you know, it's interesting to see Stephen King, one of the most prolific authors, he writes exactly 4 hours a day. And that's what he does. Stephen Pressfield, another very prolific person, 4 hours a day. You go back through history and there, and a lot of really prolific people, they have a schedule, 4 hours of focus time is what they spend. That's kind of pretty close to the limits of human capacity. And so I discovered this through the hard banging. I always learn lessons through banging my head, and then I teach people the simple way. So I never do things the easy way. So I burned myself trying to do like 60 Pomodoros in a week, and 80. And anyway, 10 is what I shoot for. 8 is probably a decent goal for most people. And you'll feel it. Believe me, you'll feel it. If you focus and do Pomodoro technique for 4 or 5 hours, it's going to hurt. It's going to work your brain. So anyway, so I plan that all out, and then I know exactly what I'm going to get done that week, right? I know, and I know it to a very high degree of certainty, because I'm not putting more in than I can do, and I can estimate things in 1, two or three Pomodori, especially repeatable things, right? So I know, and I can also use sort of a time boxing as well, right? Because if I'm writing a blog post, I know that from experience that a blog post takes me three Pomodori to write. And if I feel like I'm going over that, then I know it's time to wrap this up, John, because you're on the third Pomodori. You better be getting to the end of this blog post at this point. So that's how I would do it. I'd do my Pluralsight. My Pluralsight modules would go in there, and I know how long each phase of the Pluralsight. A part of it was breaking it down into a process that was repeatable. If you look at a lot of prolific people, you will always see a system, a process, like a template that they use to do things. I was just reading, my daughter, she's reading a book series called Magic Treehouse, and I'm listening to it as she's reading them to me, right? And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. There's like 100 books in the series or something. And they all start out the same way. They all have like some aspect where they go to a place. There's some conflict of something. They learn a valuable character lesson. They make a friend. They come back, right? And it's this format. It's a template. So that's another piece of doing that. But that's the main technique. It seems real simple. And then there's one other thing that I add on to this, which is sort of the commitment aspect of it, which is I have a quota system. So, and this is something that I think is unique. I haven't seen someone else talk about this, but for example, everything that I do that I want to make goals, that I have a goal that I want to make progress on, I have a quota in a length of time. So let's say like I have quotas for, I must run 3 times a week. I must work out or lift weights 3 times a week. I must, when I was doing Pluralsight videos, it was, I must complete 3 Pluralsight modules every week. That was my quota. It has to be done. And everything that's the quota that has to be done. And these are things that I'm 100% committing to. There's no way I'm not doing this, right? And so you got to be, if you have that mindset, when you develop the quota system, you've got to be sure that the things are not too big. Otherwise, you're going to have a lot of pain because the moment you start lying to yourself, that's when you start to lose power. You lose power in your life because you can now long, you're no longer living your life. Your life is living you. So making personal commitments and keeping them is very, very important to me. And so that's in the quota system. I would just warn people that if you're going to do this, make small commitments at first, but make 100% of you commitments. And so I would then, when I do that, the technique where I'm using the weekly planning, I'm now taking the things that I've committed to in this quota system and I'm putting them in first. Those are the things that get slotted in there first on the days because those things have to be done because those are the things that lead to my bigger goals in life. Those are the things like getting in shape, you know, losing so much weight or whatever it is, or producing. My goal was to produce 30 Pluralsight courses that year. And so I broke it down and I said, if I'm going to produce 30 Pluralsight courses this year that are about 3 to 5 hours each, how am I going to do this? I'm going to make them all 5 modules and I'm going to do 3 modules every single week. And that will get me there and give me a little bit of spare time to take a break and in case something bad happens that I've got a buffer. And so that's, you know, that's where it comes from, is taking those big goals, break them down, make the quotas, and then using that weekly planning to plan that out and using the Pomodoro technique in order to make sure that you're measuring as accurately as possible. And I'll say one other thing on the Pomodoro technique, which that I found extremely valuable because I thought it was a bunch of crap when someone first told me. I was like, focus for 25 minutes? That doesn't make sense. But I don't know, you know, people listening, or Jesse, you too, have you ever felt like, you know, you got this list of stuff and you don't really have control over stuff because sometimes stuff takes longer than it's supposed to take, right? And you get done at the end of the day and you did a lot of hard work, like you were busting butt, but you didn't complete all the things on the list. So what do you feel like at the end of the day? Feel like a failure, right? I mean, I felt like this a whole lot of time. So I'm getting all this stuff done. I'm doing awesome. I'm working hard. But because of some arbitrary list that I created, I set myself up. I set rules for myself that I feel like a failure every day. And that's not a good way to live. So the nice thing about the Pomodoro technique is it's a goal you can achieve every single day. If my goal is to get 10 Pomodori done, and that means it's something I'm in complete control over, assuming I have the time in my schedule, right? And some days I've set the goal for 5 Pomodori, but it's a goal that you can absolutely achieve because at the end of the day, you can say, hey, did I sit down and do 10 Pomodori? Or did I sit down and do 5 Pomodori? Whatever my goal was. And it doesn't matter what actually got done. It only matters, did you do the best that you can and focus? And so every day, all of a sudden, I was happy and rewarded because I was succeeding, because I was hitting a goal, because I made a goal that I could achieve every single day and be happy. happy about, and it didn't depend on what got done. And sometimes things that I estimated took longer, sometimes they took shorter, but it didn't matter because now I was set up for success instead of set up for failure every day. And I'll tell you what, if you're set up for failure every day and you keep on pounding yourself in the head every day, I mean, getting beat with a stick is a motivation, but eventually you stop, you're tired, you give up, you fall down and you're tired of being hit with the stick. And then you gotta, you know, you go down for some time and you gotta build up the courage to get back up again and you hit yourself with a stick. It's a pattern that a lot of people fall into. And I finally found the way to break that pattern with this very simple Pomodoro technique, which at first I thought was crazy. So.